Denise Crosby, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hey, it's Tom Matthews from Return of the Living Dead and Friday the 13th, Part 6, to name a few, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Hey guys, Tyler Mayne here, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hi, I'm John Russo, screenwriter of Night of the Living Dead. Welcome to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? I'm Mean Joe Grizzly, and when I'm not obsessing over my art to homicidal levels or fighting the Harkonnen hordes in the deserts of Arrakis, I'm at the Grizzly Cave, watching movies, reading comics, listening to metal, and of course, crushing beers. And after a grueling work week at my day job, and now being sick, I'm back with maybe two early entries in my top films of the year, with the absolute slow burn mindfuck that is Stop Motion and the galactic epic that is Dune Part 2. But before we get started, I want y'all to take a second and follow the show on all social media platforms, as well as joining my Mean Militia on the show's official Facebook group by clicking the links down in the episode description. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the show on whatever platform y'all listen on. By doing this, y'all support the show and help me continue to talk to y'all about all forms of badassery. So let's start by diving into the world of artists who allow their art to turn them into a psychopath with Stop Motion. This is Grizzly Grade Reviews. The daughter of a famous stop-motion animator attempts to finish her mother's last film, but instead decides to create her own film, resulting in a descent into madness where she would do anything to finish her work. And I am really overly simplifying that plot synopsis. So to add a little more to this, this is the story of a girl named Ella, and she is the daughter of a stop-motion animator who is apparently famous and very well respected, and has also lost the use of her hands due to arthritis. So Ella is enlisted by her to finish her final film. And right away you see that her mother is hyper overbearing, mentally abusive, and completely rejects and stymies any of Ella's input, ideas, or creativity. Ella's life is completely miserable, to say the least, but then things take a turn when her mother suffers a stroke and is essentially in a coma. So Ella moves to a isolated studio apartment and decides to finish her mother's film, but then she meets this really odd little girl in her apartment complex, and the little girl takes interest in the film that Ella is making. But after watching one scene of it, she tells Ella that it's boring and she should do something different. And that starts this strange collaboration between her and the little girl, where Ella builds and animates these little puppets that she uses for stop motion, and the little girl just tells her the story and tells her how to make the puppets and etc. But then Ella begins to become increasingly unhinged and obsessed, and eventually she can't tell what's reality and what is fiction, and then the descent into madness, violence, and even murder begins. And that's all I'm really going to say about the plot, because this movie is great. I didn't know how I felt about it at first. Not that I thought it was bad, obviously, but it was a lot to unpack. And first off, this film is deep. It explores what happens with an artist when they are so engrossed in their art that it becomes this unhealthy obsession. And in Ella's case, she has never had control of her life or been able to explore her own creativity or art. She's always been doing someone else's work. She has literally been the puppet or the figure that's being controlled, much like the figures that she controls in her stop motion animation films. And speaking of the stop motion sequences in this movie are fantastic, creepy, and completely uncomfortable. They remind me a lot of the music video for the song Sober by the progressive metal band Tool. If you're a fan of heavy music or just a fan of Tool, that video really displays what the stop motion kind of looks like in this movie. And from what I read, the director of this movie, Robert Morgan, also did the stop motion scenes in the film, as well as wrote the film. And honestly, you could tell, because this movie is definitely from the artist's perspective, which brings up the question of, does this film commit the cardinal sin that most art house films commit, where it becomes so arrogant, so pretentious, or so full of itself that you're just sitting through this entire film just rolling your eyes? Thankfully, not. And I feel it was very well written and directed to the point that it maintains its super artistic style and message without going that route that so many of these types of directors love to do. The weird for weird's sake, without any context or purpose, those types of choices will quickly bring a film down for me and make it unwatchable. But thank God this director doesn't do that. Moving on, the character of the Ash Man, or this entity that is beginning to infiltrate Ella's life, is so damn simple in its design, but that shit is so damn creepy. Every time that thing is on the screen, I'm immediately uncomfortable. Robert Morgan was super effective with that design and concept, which brings me to the cast. I think they're all solid. Aisling Franciosa, who plays Ella, is the clear standout. She not only gives this great emotional performance, but her nonverbal performance, like her facial expressions, her mannerisms, and her reactions to things that happen in the movie, are incredible. Her descent into madness, it looks all too real. As far as the rest of the cast goes, they're all great at their roles, which is to be the biggest assholes ever. Particularly, Thurika Wilson Reed. She played such a great, stuck-up, spoiled, opportunistic bitch. I could not stand her character, but she played it so freaking well. Tom York does well as the, quote, supportive boyfriend as well, even though you'll see what happens if you watch the movie. They do so well at their respective roles, and you can see, it's as far as like how those characters are written and their roles, that you can see how Ella plunged into insanity so easily because of their two-faced, backstabbing, and opportunistic behavior and their relationship with her. Morgan did a fantastic job of writing and directing them to give these organic performances. As far as my few negatives go, one of them is just, it really lies in something that I have a pet peeve with in real life, and that is the little girl annoyed the piss out of me because she is such a disrespectful little girl. And I know that sounds weird, but when I equate stuff in real life to movies, which a lot of us do, that's like one of my biggest pet peeves. If your kid's disrespectful, or anybody's kid's disrespectful, it just pisses me off. And this little girl is the epitome of disrespect. From touching stuff she knows she has no business touching, to throwing her trash on the floor to her smart-ass mouth. She annoyed me throughout this entire movie. And that was probably intentional. And if that was the case, it worked. And there was only a couple of times that I felt the director lost his grip on the artsy stuff. But legitimately, they are such short scenes and instances that it was barely any consequence. And overall, I think stop motion is 2024's first great horror film. Robert Morgan managed to make an art house film that doesn't think it's smarter than the audience, which makes it a more accessible viewing because of its mix of live action and stop motion animated scenes, and by delivering a cautionary tale of an artist's obsession with their art and how it can blur the lines between reality and fiction. Stop motion gets a 4.25 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guarantee. Stop motion is probably out of theaters by now because it had a limited run, but it should be dropping on Shudder in a couple of months. So definitely check that one out. This one's pretty good, guys. So now let's move on to Dune 2. Paul Atreides continues his journey for revenge by becoming one of the Fremen, building an army, and facing off against the Harkonnens. But as the battle rages on, Paul must decide to pursue love or become the savior of the universe. So this is the first movie of 2024 that I was really, really looking forward to, and it did not disappoint. I have been saying this for a while now, that Dune has a lot of potential to be the next big epic blockbuster franchise, and Dune 2 kind of solidified that for me as far as the quality goes. And if Warner Brothers can keep releasing these every other year or every 3 years and keep the same quality at the least, it can replace Star Wars as the next big blockbuster epic. Kind of like when they had the same kind of energy with the first Lord of the Rings trilogy. That was more popular than Star Wars at one point. But I mean, it's got the lore and the world building. The author Frank Herbert, he wrote 6 books filled with space witches, cosmic Jesus, intergalactic wars, cool alien creatures, different languages, sects of people, societies, and there are even more books that his son wrote that could be used for side stories or, you know, little future installments. Even if they just stuck with the first 6 books, that gives us at least 12 movies. And let me reel it in, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself and talking about the potential future and all, so let's just talk about Dune 2 right now. So part 2 picks up almost immediately after the events of part 1. Paul and his mother Jessica are with the Fremen, but they haven't been accepted yet. And after both of them go through their own character growth arcs, the story truly begins. And we're thrown even further into the world of the Fremen, their beliefs, different factions, and their politics. And Paul quickly becomes one of their best warriors, and to many, a messiah. Meanwhile, Jessica would end up becoming the new elder mother of the Fremen, and they would go on completely separate paths that would lead them to a event that could or could not happen depending on the choices that Paul makes. And you just get to see Timothée Chalamet and Rebecca Ferguson be awesome as usual. Timothée Chalamet just continues to grow as an actor with every role he plays. His portrayal of Paul is no exception. He is just phenomenal. I loved him in Bones and All, and I loved him in the first Dune, and he just keeps getting better and better with every role he accepts. And Rebecca Ferguson, I mean, what is there to say that hasn't already been said about her? Whether she is a good guy or a villain, she is always formidable on screen. Like, just a force. Like, no matter what role she plays, she just has this strange intimidation factor about her. I don't know what it is, but she commands your attention when she's on the screen. And the rest of the cast is great. I mean, there is one, but I'll get to that in a minute. Josh Brolin, great as usual. Javier Bardem as Stilgar was great, and he was funny at times. He had the crowd laughing audibly at times. But Austin Butler as Freyd Rutha was a fantastic villain. Every time he was on the screen, he was menacing, and you felt like even when the hero characters are in control of the situation, he is still the biggest threat in the room. It was a phenomenal performance. Florence Pugh as the Emperor's daughter, fantastic job. Dave Bautista, fantastic job. And Christopher Walken as the Emperor. That was kind of a surprise. He had a very big role, yet small role, and he did a phenomenal job as well. They were all great in their respective roles. And there was only one actor that, for me, didn't stand out. And that's Zendaya. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I think she has zero range. She is the same character in everything I have ever seen her in. Even if she is written well, she is still the same damn character, and I don't understand the hype behind her. She's very similar to me. She's very similar to Rebecca Hall for me. And everyone puts her on this pedestal, and I can name dozens of better actresses that don't get the same praise. She is by far the weakest actor in this cast. And because of her performance and skill, I can't really buy into her character's romance with Paul. And I mean, I'm sure she's a nice person, but she doesn't deserve this role or some of the bigger roles she's getting, in my opinion. She needs a coach badly. And I know that that's so mean to say, and who the fuck am I to say that? I'm not an actor. You know, I can barely put this podcast out without screwing up my script or whatever, you know? But it's just one of those things where it's like, stop giving this girl roles if she's just so pedestrian in them. I don't feel any emotion from this girl when she's on screen. And I know it sounds like I'm going in hard on her, but seriously, there's so many better actresses out there that deserve more praise. Stop just picking the pretty face. A pretty face don't make you a good actor. And Zendaya is like the perfect example of that. And I hate that because her character in the story of Dune is so important. And I can't buy into her character and Paul's romance because her acting is so bad. So I'm not going to say it's not complete shit, but it's not good either. It's just very robotic and very, very pedestrian. That's the best way I could put it. But moving on, the cinematography was amazing as expected. The use of the filming locations and the set pieces, makeup effects, and the incredible CGI all blended together and working in harmony, delivering us this visual masterpiece. It was beautiful to look at. And I believe they filmed in the United Arab Emirates or whatever. That place looks gorgeous. Deserts kind of freaked me out, but somehow they made it look beautiful on screen. And the fight choreography was also a sight to see. So great, like exciting one-on-one fights in this movie that you just don't expect from these types of movies. Yeah, I mean, you've got them in like Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, but this combat just felt so real, so human. That's the best way that I could put it. It just felt so real and so human. And all of that stuff, all of this, the greatness of this movie is all tied together with this epic score that has this haunting sections of it. And then in the heat of these grand battles that they're having, has these booming parts of percussion and droning deep sounds that it just sends chills up my spine when I'm watching it. I could talk about this stuff all day, guys, but I want y'all to go see this movie. It's a great follow-up to the first part. This completes the first storyline from the first book, and it kicks the door open on the world of Dune, and I can't wait for this story to continue. Dune has so much potential, just like I was saying earlier, to be this new epic franchise that we get a film from every 2 years or every few years, that we could just look forward to getting this great story, great epic blockbuster film every year that has so much quality all around. We're desperately missing that right now, guys. We need that so bad in films right now. And Star Wars ain't getting it done. Star Wars has been shit for last several years. As far as the movies go, yeah, we've had Rogue One. We've had a couple of ones that were okay, like Rogue One, and then you had Solo, I didn't think was as bad as everybody else made it out to be. And some of the Disney Plus shows have been good, but the main trilogy has been complete ass. That last trilogy was awful, and we can do better, and we are doing better right now. We just have to get behind it, and that is Dune. So for that, Dune Part 2 gets a 4.75 out of 5 and is Grizzly Grade guarantee. Go see this in theaters now, guys. Go this afternoon, wherever you're listening to this show at. Make time. Go see this movie. Support this movie. We need new, good, quality movies now more than ever. And Dune is here for it, and so am I. And with that, we bring another episode to an end. Thank you all so much for your continued support. Without y'all, the show isn't possible. If you like this episode, please consider subscribing to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to click the links in the description below to follow me on all social media platforms. Make sure you check out Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Guy is a synth wave master. He does the music for my intro and my outro and all the tracks in between. Go check that guy's stuff out. He's on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Music. Make sure you follow me on YouTube. I also produce content there. I've been putting the audio versions of this podcast up there, as well as a new segment known as Mean Joe's Monster Manual. The first episode of that is out now, and it is on Harry Warden from My Bloody Valentine. So make sure y'all check that out and let me know what y'all think about that. Also, this week, we're going to be starting to roll out content for Mean Joe Metal. That'll also be on YouTube as well as all the other social media pages, including TikTok. So make sure y'all follow me on all those so y'all don't miss any of this content. I'm bringing y'all a lot of content here lately, and I really appreciate all the support that y'all have been giving me. It means a lot. March is going to be a busy month, like I was saying before. I believe this week coming up, Blumhouse's Imaginary is coming out. That's probably going to be the next podcast episode, so stay tuned for that. And remember, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.